The county's number one talk show, the 9 till noon show on Highland Radio.
And now it's time for the talk of the Northwest, the 9 to noon show with Greg Hughes on Highland Radio.
Hello and a very good morning to you. 5 minutes past nine. It's Wednesday, the 5th of April, 2023. And talk of the weather there. Do you remember the April at the first lockdown, what that was, weather was like? That would be remarkable to get it again. No sign of it, though, but wouldn't it be nice? Anyway, we've our business to do this morning as that rain clears. The lines are open for you to get involved in the conversation. Start your own 086 60 25,000. Don't be afraid to reach out to us and run stuff by us if you want to talk about something. You're not pushed straight on air, or sometimes you don't even have to. We want to speak to you on 086 60 25,000. That's WhatsApp, so text, as I mentioned. Feel free to give us a call, 07491 25,000, 07491 25,000, and your emails to comments at highlandradio.com. And as I remind you every morning, and I'll continue to do so, and people join us every day watching the show live on their big screen via their smart TV or Fire Stick on YouTube. Just search Highland Radio Ireland. Give us a like and a subscribe if you don't mind. And we're across all of our Facebook pages as well. And you can watch in browser on our website, highlandradio.com. Just click watch live. Let's start with the papers, of course. The Finn Valley Voice this morning. Pierce Doherty will deliver the main oration at Drumbow on Easter Sunday, the 9th of April. This year is an important year for Irish people and Republicans across the state and county of Donegal. We mark 25 years of the Good Friday Agreement, an historic and international success story in peacemaking, he says. On to the Inish Times now. The preferred route, we're told, emerges for the Bridgend Bypass, an emerging preferred route corridor for a proposed new road from Bridgend to the border has been identified. The preferred option for the new road, if finally selected, would bring traffic north of the village. A preferred route corridor of about 200 metres wide is going out to public consultation starting today. The route corridor is the preferred option, but not necessarily the final one. Local councillors were told at a workshop on the project at Monday. The preferred corridor was selected ahead of four other options: another route north of the village, a route through the village, a route south of the village, or no new road. On to the Donegal Post this morning. Soul destroying is their front page headline. Volunteers in a major cleanup on the main road from Barnesmore to Donegal Town found themselves dealing with what they described as dangerous and disgusting items. Among enough roadside litter to fill around 60 large bags was a used colostomy bag. It was but one of many discarded items that was particularly unpleasant for those who had come together at the crack of dawn to make a positive difference to the area. The annual clean-up was organised by Stephen Thomas and Raymond Jordan and was carried out by a team of around 20 volunteers in order to minimise the risk posed to traffic on what is one of the busiest roads in the county. There was a very early start for everyone involved. Fair play to them for getting involved in that, of course. The Irish Independent this morning, and lots. Donald Trump's picture is on all of the front pages, as you can imagine. We'll get to that story on the front of the Times, but we'll start with the Irish Independent. A special operation targeting potential sexual predators within the Irish Defence Forces has been established after it emerged. The Gardaí have 26 complaints of sex assaults on record. Gardaí are now reviewing previous cases to ensure they were investigated properly. Some of the cases date to the early 1960s. All are either currently under investigation or are old cases under review. Garda Commissioner Drew Harris has said he expects more complaints to come forward. The operation, which is led by the Garda National Protective Services Bureau, has been welcomed by the military. It follows a report by an independent review group which found that the army barely tolerates women. It uncovered a discriminable pattern of rape and sexual assault. The report has been described as stark and harrowing by Tánaiste Micheál Martin. And hopefully, finally, once and for all, there's a proper and fulsome investigation. And if there is a culture within the armed forces along those lines, that it's rooted out. And we know firsthand, having spoke to a number of women who have been in the army and related their horrible experiences in that regard, but also just in terms of progression and treatment in general. Right, the Irish Times. Former US President Donald Trump has been formally arrested and charged in a court in New York on 34 felony counts of falsifying business records. He was a quiet character, mute in New York, but when he got home He let rip, didn't he, last night in a 25-minute speech. Mr. Trump, who is the front runner to secure the Republican Party nomination for the 2024 presidential election, pleaded not guilty to the charges made against him. Mr. Trump's lawyers yesterday hit out at the nature of the case being brought against the former president. "We're going to fight it. We're going to fight it hard," they said. They maintained the prosecution was unjustified and argued that he was only prosecuted because his name was Donald Trump. Mr. Trump's lawyers claimed the prosecution did not allege that any federal crime or state crime had been violated. The charges relate to a lower class of felony. Prosecutors alleged Mr. Trump was part of an unlawful plan to suppress negative information, including an illegal payment of €130,000 that was ordered by the defendant to suppress information that would hurt his campaign. Now, the allegation is that it is an illegal payment, as it's stated here as one. There's no alleged here, but that also has to be established if that was an illegal payment. Paying hush money in America is not unusual at all. It's certainly not illegal. It just, I think the crux of it here is if it was paid for, benefited his campaign, but wasn't declared as such. That's my understanding anyway. The indictment alleges the reason he committed the crime of falsifying business records was in part to promote his candidacy. From August 2015 to December 2017, the defendant orchestrated a scheme with others to influence the 2016 presidential election by identifying and purchasing negative information about him to suppress its publication and benefit the defendant's electoral prospects. In order to execute the unlawful scheme, they say, the participants violated election law and made and caused false entries in the business records of various entities in New York. And there's 34 charges. It really is one charge, but every time he signed a document or reviewed a document or signed a check or whatever it might be, that seems to be a different count each time, culminating in the 34. On to the Irish Daily Mail this morning. A recruitment crisis in secondary schools is forcing principals to turn to unqualified teachers, cut subjects and curtail extracurricular activities. Now, for so long, teachers have been the brunt of a lot of criticism. You know the usual stuff. Teachers listening will know they're off today. You've heard it all. You say you're a teacher and they'll say, oh, summer holidays, Christmas holidays, oh, you have it handy. And well, if it was that handy, why aren't there any teachers? There is a massive shortage of teachers, so the job must not be quite as cushy as many might think. Three quarters of school principals have said they received no replies to advertised teaching posts in the current school year. Almost half of all secondary schools have at least one teaching vacancy. A Red Sea poll of 2,100 members of the Association of Secondary Teachers Ireland has found. As a result, special needs teachers are being reassigned to other duties, while higher and ordinary level classes are being merged. Now, special needs, it's kind of buried in the story here, but there is a shortage of teachers. And if special needs teachers are having to be reassigned, well, that means the work, the important work that they're employed to do, is not being done, or at least it's not being done fully, which I think is really quite significant in this story as well. The difficulty in sourcing staff has been blamed on the housing crisis and the high cost of renting, and has sparked serious concerns over the quality of education children are receiving. ASDI President Miriam Duggan said today's survey reveals that schools are being forced to use unqualified teachers to divert resources away from students with special educational needs and to drop subjects from the curriculum. This is shocking, they say. This is going to be a particular problem in particular areas. I'm not saying it's not across the country, but I don't know if it's as bad here in the Northwest as it might be in other areas where housing shortage and rents, housing shortage is more acute and rents are higher. I'm not really quite sure. On to the Irish Sun, and they're on about the eviction ban today, as all papers are. I just thought I'd go to this paper for its article. Tens of thousands of people are about to lose their homes with no idea where they will live. This is according to Father Peter McVerry. The leading homelessness campaigner also doubled down on his claim that the Taoiseach overruled the housing minister to end the eviction ban. Now, this has been really quite controversial and is probably a much bigger deal than Owen O'Brien's tweet. But it hasn't really got the same kind of traction, I don't think, in terms of the media coverage. Like, Father Peter McVerry is very trusted, and he is sure that Taoiseach Leo Varadkar overruled the housing minister in ending the eviction ban. Now, both the housing minister and the Taoiseach have rejected this, but Father McVerry is not giving in, of course. The Residents Tenancy Board this week revealed more than 9,000 eviction notices were issued to renters in the second half of last year, which means between 22,000 and 30,000 people will be forced to find a new home in the coming months after the eviction ban is lifted. Father McVerry, who heads a homelessness charity, said, "We have a tsunami of misery coming down the road. 4,300 eviction notices in the last 3 months of last year. We don't have the figures for the first 3 months of this year, but it's probably being going to be quite similar." And of course, one eviction could be four or five people left homeless. So then Alan Farrell, TD, he decided to get involved in this conversation. For what reason, I don't know, on Twitter. And he tweeted, "Talking around corners might be normal for a political activist, but I'm sure it's not normal for a priest." Now, why would any clearly thinking government TD have a shot at Father Peter McVerry like that? Because he is respected beyond his religion and his faith. You know, even people of no faith or different faiths respect him and what he has to say. And I think that TD has made a serious error there in terms of PR, whether he believes it or not, in turning his attentions to that gentleman. The Irish Daily Star tells us this morning that Health Minister Stephen Donnelly has said 8,500 women used abortion services last year. This compares to more than 6,000 terminations of pregnancies recorded in the previous 2 years. So in total, over the last 3 years, 14,500 women used abortion services last year. Ireland's abortion laws, liberalised following a 2018 referendum, have been the subject of a review as part of legislation introduced. Under the current law, abortions can be performed up to 12 weeks of pregnancy, and women face a 3-day waiting period before they can access an abortion. Ultimately, the review is about improving access to services for women. "That's what we're focused on," Minister Donnelly said. He denied suggestions that the system could collapse under demand for services. So over 8,500 women availed of termination of pregnancy services in Ireland last year. He said that the vast majority of women have their needs met in primary care, meaning that they can take a pill. Only 11 of Ireland's 19 maternity hospitals are providing full abortion services. Some hospitals have said the delay is because of conscientious objections by staff, but still 8,500 abortions carried out, terminations carried out in Ireland last year. Right, on to the Irish Mirror now, finally to the Irish Mirror now, and quite a significant thing happened, really, in terms of the redrawing of the lines globally, and that was Finland's accession to NATO. Finland is a nation bordering Russia. Russia, of course, invaded Ukraine because they didn't like the way NATO was going. They thought NATO was getting a bit uppity, but they probably won't be happy then with the border, the NATO border with Russia doubling in effect, which is what happened, which happened yesterday. Finnish ministers formally handed over documents to the alliance's Secretary General Jens Stoltenberg and US Secretary of State Antony Blinken at NATO's Brussels HQ. The Nordic country applied 11 months ago, prompted by Russia's invasion of Ukraine. The move is a huge blow to Kremlin tyrant Putin, who fears the nuclear-armed alliance's expansion towards Russia. Now, the Russian Foreign Ministry warned the Russian Federation will be forced to take military, technical and other retaliatory measures to counter the threats to our nation's or national security. And so, as we mentioned during a look at the papers, former US President Donald Trump has lashed out at New York prosecutor Alvin Bragg for bringing criminal charges against him and declared himself the victim of election interference without offering evidence. "I never thought anything like this could happen in America," Mr. Trump told supporters gathered at his Mar-a-Lago home in Palm Beach, Florida. "The only crime I've committed," he said, "has been to fearlessly defend our nation against those who seek to destroy it." Raymond is a listener with dual American Irish citizenship and joins us now. Good morning to you, Raymond.
Good morning, Greg. How's the form?
Form's good, thank you. Raymond, so before we start, would you count yourself as a fan of Trump's? Have you liked what he's been doing over the last few years?
Greg, I don't really know how to describe myself.
A bit like myself, to be honest with you.
Trump's done some good stuff. He's also done some bad stuff. you know, I'm not a Republican. I'm not a Democrat. You know, I'm just my own little person here. And you know, I mean, what happened yesterday, it seemed to be there was smoke, but there was no fire. And it seemed his attorneys were quite sort of surprised. They were looking for, if you will, a smoking gun. And nothing came out. And, like, he was charged with 34 counts, but they were all, like, the lowest level of misdemeanor, apparently, in New York State. And, you know, the district attorney in Manhattan was trying to sort of turn it into a political affair in here. So, like, it was sort of amusing. A former acting director of the FBI, who would be no friend to Trump's, in fact, Trump had his attorney general sack him, he referred to the whole affair as, quote, a disappointment.
Mm-hmm.
And that sort of said a lot. This is somebody who would have blood in his, you know, teeth for Trump in here. And you know, it's just like he's apparently accused of somehow. And like Trump is no angel. Like, you know, a cousin of mine, a first cousin of mine, in New York City here, knew or knows two Irish contractors who did a lot of work for Trump, and Trump, you know, basically screwed them. He said, I'm not paying the bill. And they were forced into bankruptcy or administration, out of business. You know, he ruined them. You know, so, like, you know, this is how Trump operates. But, you know, on the other hand, would a war in Ukraine have started if Trump was in power? No. And, like,
how
Trump
do you know that, though? How can you say that with certainty? Because, you know, his language towards Putin was the reason war wouldn't start is because he would nuke him. He made the same kind of threats to North Korea. He's not a great peacemaker. He would have, if he were to prevent war, he would have done so by meeting Putin head on.
Well, it's difficult in Washington, D.C. They have these sort of, they call them neoconservatives.
Mm-hmm.
They're basically war hawks. Everything is, you know, it's called a zero-sum game. We have to win. You have to lose. I get everything you have in here. And, you know, apparently the number three person in the American State Department was stationed in Ukraine for a good number of years, and she's incredibly hawkish. And it's like people here don't understand, you know, supposedly somewhere, and it's hard to put an estimate on things, mm-hmm. like 500,000 people have been killed in Ukraine. And like, you know, does the United States care about 500,000 or 5 million? It's not a factor, you know. It's just, you know, we get to test our weapons. We get to control things in here. And we better start worrying about China, you know. And so, I mean, it's very difficult. But, like, you know, Trump, and this is sort of maybe a false analogy, so please excuse me. You know, England had, you know, the legend of Robin Hood, you know, Robin from the rich and given to the poor in here. And Trump sort of almost did the opposite in the United States. He was Robin from the poor and given to the rich through almost $8 trillion in tax breaks, mm-hmm. when he was in office. But it's like, I think the Manhattan district attorney is sort of unwittingly, you know, creating a legend in the making here. And like, you know, Trump probably has at least a 50-50 chance of being the next president of the United States, you know, because they're going to be terrified.
So who's the victim here? Because this works very well for Donald Trump, does it not? In that it pretty much locks him in as the Republican candidate. Now, how this whole affair plays out to the general population remains to be seen, but he wants to run for president again, and this pretty much locks it in. So this works very much in his favour, not to mention he's not facing any felony charges, is he? He's got an awful lot of other legal distractions, so this is just another thing for him that's just going to copper fasten his campaign.
No, I mean, I totally agree. Like, up until, I guess, yesterday afternoon before this so-called arraignment or whatever they call it, he, in the previous three days, had raised $7 million, okay? You know, that's a small amount of money, but it's a lot of money. And you know, that $77 million in another month or two could be $70 million. And, you know, he's the aggrieved person here. And, you know, they're out to get poor Donald in here. And you know, his people are very savvy when it comes to money, and you know, they're on the internet, you know, raising right now. And, you know, I don't know how much they've raised since yesterday afternoon, but, you know, it's going to add up in here. And you know, I mean, this is a new reality of the world here.
The only thing is you see, like, you know, I don't involve myself in arguments as to whether, you know, Trump's right or Biden's right or Republicans.
Oh, yeah.
Right. Firstly, I mean, America is incredibly important, don't get me wrong, but it is another country, right? But secondly, they're all as bad as each other, really, aren't they? They're all in it for their own self-interest. Everything that happens to benefit the elite classes. There's very little
that happens
to benefit regular people. That's what amazes me, that, you know, regular people like you and me, Raymond, get so tied up and involved in this, because it doesn't matter who's in power in the United States. Nothing's going to change in with any great significance. You know what I mean? Like,
I totally agree with you. I mean, you know, if you go back in history, and this is on a Trump personal level, the very best decision he ever made was he married a young lady from the then Czechoslovakia. You know, she had the brain, she had the talent, the smarts, the savvy, the instincts. She made Donald Trump who Donald Trump became.
Imagine an immigrant made Donald Trump. There you go. Isn't that remarkable?
Yeah, no, and like, you know, his grandfather, and I'm not trying to besmirch anybody, so please don't get me down for slander or anything. His grandfather would have run in Alaska what in the United States we would call a whorehouse or a house of prostitution. That's where the money started. And then his father was sort of a pretty good-sized property developer in Queens County, or in Queens, in the borough of New York. And so he had made a few million there. Mm. And then Ivanka Trump came on board, and you know, she supercharged everything. You know, I mean, she was incredibly savvy. You know, she had all the instincts and she had the brains. And, like, you know, he wasn't very secure in the brains department.
Yeah.
You know, so I mean, like, she gets credit. But, you know, like, I mean, you know, Trump, I'm sure when he wakes up this morning in Mar-a-Lago, Florida, I mean, he's got to be smiling at himself, you know.
Yeah, just in relation to the comments, because it's coming in on text here. As I say, I'm not anti-Trump, pro-Trump. It's American politics. It doesn't really put me up or down. It doesn't pay my mortgage. But just at the end of last year, he was asked on Fox News, who he doesn't like anymore, it seemingly, what he would do as it would in relation to Putin. And he said, I listen to him constantly using the N-word. And I presume he's referring to Nazi there. That's the N-word, and he's constantly using it. Oh, sorry, it's nuclear, sorry. I listen to Putin constantly using the nuclear word. That's the nuclear word, and he's constantly using it. Trump told Fox News on Monday, he said the nuclear word typically refers to a race ship, and he goes on to, what he goes on to then say, we're talking about nuclear power here. And then he says, but we're a greater nuclear power. We have the greatest submarines in the world, the most powerful machines ever built. You should say, look, if you mention that word one more time, we're going to send them over and we'll be coasting back and forth up and down your coast. So in other words, if he were to have prevented the war in Ukraine, he's quite clearly on the record saying, although the war had started at that point, it would be meeting fire with fire. Do you know what I mean? He's not this great diplomat. I just hate the way sometimes history be rewritten a little bit, Raymond.
No. Look, I'm not going to disagree with you. Mr. Trump, is certainly not a diplomat. You know, I mean, there's a massive amount of, the American term would be bravado. You know, he's a big 800-pound gorilla just by himself. You know, but it's, this Ukraine, there was a lot of, I think, very bad, serious misunderstandings. And you know, like, I'm sure you know, like, a year ago, Ireland had the chair of the United Nations Security Council, like a very important position, and you know, Ireland, if you will, sat on its thumbs. They, you know, and this thing, they knew 6 months in advance there was the likelihood of an invasion was going to happen in here, and you
know, the invasion happened. I get you, but again, let's not rewrite history either to any extent. Because the invasion happened in 2014, and the world stood by and allowed Putin, or didn't really say a great deal, to march into another country and annex a great big portion of it. That happened in 2014. And sure, if that happened in 2014, of course he's going to go and try and take more of it back. Now, don't get me wrong. The West and NATO were antagonizing Putin all the while. That was never really talked about with, you know, demonstrations and war games close to Russia, you know, pulling the political strings in Ukraine, trying to get other countries close to Russia to join NATO. You saw what happened in Finland there. That was a country dead against NATO membership. The war started all of a sudden. All the people wanted to be part of NATO. Do you know, like, but Russia, Putin wasn't just sitting there minding his own business. There is a political movement in Russia for it to return to the Russia it once was. And he's, you know, the architect of that.
Oh, no, look, Greg, I really can't disagree with, you know, what you're saying here. All right. There is a little bit of another side. In 2014, there was a democratically elected president in Ukraine. The United States and NATO, for all intents and purposes, staged a coup d'etat. They didn't want to wait another 2 years for the next election. And, you know, before that, I think it was 2008, there was a meeting, I don't know, in Europe somewhere. George Bush and Putin were there. And Bush said, you know, he was going to get, you know, Georgia and some other place into NATO. And Putin, no, we're not gonna, I'm not tolerating this, you know. And if you go back to 1991 or thereabouts when the Soviet Union fell, the United States Secretary of State and the head of NATO gave public assurances to Russia that they wouldn't move one, that NATO would not move one inch eastward. So like they broke commitments in here. So like, you know, there's problems on both sides in here. You know, so like I'm no diplomat, obviously, but I mean it's sad. There's 500,000 people maybe dead now. You know, there's probably $1 trillion worth of damage already caused in Ukraine, and in like in Eastern Europe, apparently historically over the centuries, borders move back and forth all over the place. Mm-hmm. There are different empires and. Like I'm no history.
Listen,
buff,
I agree with you 100%. Like it's absolutely horrendous what's happening in Ukraine, and listen, there's Russian soldiers being sent to their inevitable death over the front line, effectively sent as cannon fodder. The same in previous wars, Ukrainians as well fighting a proxy war with Western weapons. And no one's talking about peace. It's horrendous. And yet there are families just like you and me, right? Okay, we might be from different countries, yeah. Different accents, right? But we still can imagine what it's like if our son or daughter was sent away at 18, 19, never to return again. I mean, it's senseless. For what, like? And even if Russia are given the east of Ukraine, what have they got? A pile of rubble. The only thing bombs do at this stage is make the rubble hop up and down in the spot. There's nothing there to own or defend any longer. And I would just love to see, and we talked about this in Brussels last week, you know, someone, maybe even it could have been Ireland if we hadn't nailed our flag to the mast as we have, to try and broker some sort of a peace. I mean, look, even the Chinese intervention has been completely poo-pooed, it seems, by Ukraine and the West more generally. It's horrendous. Okay, let's get back to the first point just as we wrap it up then, Raymond. So, I mean, do you believe then that this action against Putin is completely political motivated? If, though, that being said, you're in favour of democracy and you want as much as possible for the leadership to be clean, and there are, you know, there's pretty serious. At the end of the day, he did have a bit of a set to, let's say, with Stormy, right? And he did pay her to silence the story. We know that. He's admitted that as much as his legal team have. Is that not worth investigating if he is to be the leader once again of the most powerful nation, we're told, in the world?
Greg, with all due respect, so please understand. This stuff with Stormy Daniels or whatever real name is, that's not a real name, is 7 years old. It's been out there for a very, very long time. There's other women out there. Like, how do you put it diplomatically? You know, the man can't keep his trousers zippered.
Yep.
Okay? Like, I don't approve of anything of that period, full stop. Okay, Trump is a scoundrel when it comes to his personal life. All right, so like, I'm not into that realm of, you know, stuff. I'm just not. Mm. You know, but like, they don't care about that because if you then look at the current president, he's got stuff too, ugly stuff.
Yeah,
that a lot of it's been covered up, and
but that was what I was saying earlier on. You see, I mean, they're all one's as bad as the other.
No. And a lot of people, prominent people, U.S. senators, congressmen. I mean, they don't have clean. We'd call it rap sheets.
And come here. If you had the opportunity, would you be down when President Biden does visit Ireland? Given that you've got dual citizenship, would you be standing on the side of the road waving your flag as he passed?
No, I don't want to put Joe Biden down. You know, when you get to be when people want to be president of the United States, I'm no psychiatrist. I think there's a lot of ego issues at play, There were issues with the Good Friday Agreement that I had personally. I had reluctantly supported it, mm-hmm. but there are issues, and there are issues all over the place in here. There are fudges all over the place. Mm-hmm. People didn't want to do it, and now they're complaining about what do you call it? Oh, what's the thing in the North now about the Northern Ireland the protocol? Mm-hmm. You know, and like they're all fudges in here. And, you know, it's just, there are conflicts of interest. Yeah. It's like your son or daughter.
As I say, Raymond, though, I mean, even whether it's Biden or Putin, I was going to say Biden or Trump in power, they are only there and put in there with money to serve the interests of others, not you or me either. That's, again, why I don't really find myself getting very passionate about the whole thing. If I thought someone could go into a position of power, right, and make life better for ordinary people. Yeah, fantastic. But every crisis, the Ukraine war, the COVID crisis, name any crisis you like, the richer get richer, the politicians get richer. And you and me argue the toss about which one of them should be in power, and it doesn't put you or me up or down. It is only they and those that they serve that benefit, which is why I find it hard to get too passionate about politics sometimes, Raymond.
No, Greg, I totally agree with you. Like, on Ukraine, the United States has already pumped in something on the order of $200 billion. That's billion. That's not million, it's billion. No, yeah, $200 billion. And like, in the old days, $1 million was a lot of money. Now it's a trillion.
Yeah, but the reason...
You know, with a T.
And part of the problem why the world's suffering inflation is that they don't... I mean, obviously they borrow money, but they print it. And if you keep printing money and creating more money, right... that isn't earned or has no source, inflation goes through the roof. And then you raise interest rates to combat the inflation. It's crazy. Raymond, listen, thanks for your insights. I understand where you're coming from. And it's an interesting conversation. And I view it almost as a soap opera rather than anything else, because that's just sometimes how it feels to me. But I appreciate your views, Raymond. And it's good to have a chat to you again. Take care of yourself. That is Raymond. He's a listener with dual citizenship. We are joined on the program now by Sarah. Good morning to you, Sarah.
Good morning, Greg.
How are you feeling?
I'm good, yeah.
Okay, right. Now, you had quite an exciting Sunday on the 12th of March.
We did indeed. I know, very unexpected.
So talk to me how the day unfolded for you, Sarah.
Well, it was just a normal Sunday. We were planning to go out for Sunday lunch out to Ballyliffin. And then around 2 o'clock, I started to get cramps, small cramps. I wasn't too concerned. And then by the time my husband came back from the town, they were getting more severe, but 30 past 2. I rang the hospital and said I was having the cramps. And they said to come on up for a check, to get checked out. So I went up and ran away. And around 3 o'clock, quarter past 2, we left Cairn to go to Letterkenny, and then got as far as Cluckley's Point, and then the pains were getting more severe, like really bad. Then my waters broke. Then we had to pull them at the Tuileries Strait, and then I gave birth there, but about half past 3.
Wow. And come here, at that time, Sarah, though, I mean, it must have been very stressful and worrying for you.
It was really, really, like, we were scared, like, that anything could have happened or went wrong. But I suppose the adrenaline took over and we had no choice, really, but to get on with it at the same time.
I get you. Christopher was just, he wasn't waiting. That's just the bottom line.
He wasn't waiting, no, he was in a hurry.
Yes, indeed he was. So when he was actually born, was it just you and your partner? Had the first responders arrived at that point?
No, it's just me and my husband. He had rang 999 on the way down on Tigris Point, but lost contact somewhere with the bad coverage in that area. But then we got through to the Northern Irish one, and then they talked through the whole birth thing, and then we got to Tuam Strait.
My word.
So I don't know. He was born before the first responder arrived.
And come here, what's your husband's name again, sorry?
Jonathan.
And Jonathan had to do the role of the midwife, effectively.
He did.
And was he any good at it?
He was. No, he's great. He was very calm, and he everything happened. Everything went well, thank God.
Oh, well, thank God. Fair play to all three of you. So then Christopher is born, and you obviously, he started crying and all that kind of stuff, and you still in the car. And then how long before the first responders arrived?
About 15 minutes later, after he was born. So Jonathan then had to cut the umbilical cord.
Oh, Jonathan did that too?
The umbilical cord attached at that stage. Yeah, he did that too.
Wow.
And
obviously then the first responders came and they were able to just confirm to you and give you peace of mind that everything at that point was okay, yeah?
That's right, yeah.
And then you were transported to hospital.
Ambulance landed then about 5 minutes after he did, and we were taken to hospital then. We landed in hospital at about 4:30, 4:45. That's when it all happened then. I kind of burst into tears at that stage. Everything just kind of came to a head.
Yeah, because that pressure was sort of released a little bit for you because you had other people there, medical professionals that would just make sure Christopher was okay and everything went smoothly.
That's it.
Who'd have thought that you'd have ended up travelling from Quigley's Point to Letterkenny with Christopher on the outside rather than on the inside?
I know.
It's remarkable, isn't it?
It's crazy.
Okay. And had you decided on the name Christopher beforehand, or did that come to you afterwards and any particular meaning to it?
No, we discussed the name before. I actually like that name.
Beautiful.
I don't know why, because we have an Anthony. I thought Christopher would be nice.
Oh, yeah, that's two lovely names, Christopher and Anthony. Yeah, they really go together well, don't they?
Yeah.
And anyone out there, don't be calling them Chris and Anto. Sarah's called them Christopher and Anthony, and that's their names, okay? Well, you'll always call them that anyway, no matter how old they get. It'll be Christopher, Anthony, come here, put your clothes in the basket. And how old is Anthony?
Anthony's 19 months. He was 19 months on the 1st of April.
Isn't that they're almost like twins. That's fantastic, isn't it?
Yeah, I know. Anthony came early, so we expected Christopher to come a bit earlier too.
Yeah.
But he came 4 days before the due date.
But your timing's great because Anthony's now just starting to become an absolute little nightmare. What did he think when he saw Mum and Dad landing with Christopher into the house? I'd say he took a few looks, did he?
It took a few days to get used to having him here.
Yeah,
he was just looking at this thing and what it was and crying, and I thought it was a doll.
And why is Mummy not constantly carrying me anymore? What's going on here? There's someone else. Splitting it. And how's Christopher getting on now? We're almost a month on, so he's still brand new, but I'd say getting stronger and bigger every day.
Yeah, he's getting great. No, he's brilliant. He loves to sleep and loves his bottles and keeps him between his feet, which is great.
Isn't that good? And you're sleeping when he's sleeping, I hope, are you? I was going to say, people tell you to do that, but come here, the chances are non-existent.
I know.
Yeah. And come here, when was Christopher actually due?
On the 15th of March,
yeah.
He was due.
Okay, so he was right on time, although a little 3 days early, but they got the dates spot on. Because nowadays they pick a date or they judge a date, don't they, early in the pregnancy, and they stick to it. It doesn't matter even if you feel that he's a bit bigger than he should be or a bit small. They stick to a date and that's that. But he arrived pretty much on time, cooked, oven ready, and away to go. Well, listen, it's a beautiful story. Fair play to Jonathan, actually, for keeping his cool and being down the business end while you just had to do was sit there.
I know.
I'm only joking. You've a beautiful family, all safe and sound at home, and I'm delighted to hear it. And fair play, so as I say, you primarily, Jonathan, and then the first responders and the ambulance, and then the crew when you get there that were able to give you that bit of space just to process it all. It's a wonderful story, Sarah. Anything you want to add or say?
No, we can't remember the name of the first responder that attended the scene, but we want to thank him very, very much. He was such a nice man. I think he's from Bundoran, but I just don't remember his name at the time.
No problem. Well, listen, or some of his colleagues are going to be listening, and I'm sure we'll put a name to that person. But listen, Sarah, thanks so much for sharing the joy. It's a beautiful story, and thankfully everything went so well. And you'll not sell that car in a rush. You're going to have to keep that. You'll not be trading that one in.
Yeah, this is the memory of it.
Okay, listen, best wishes to everyone, to Jonathan, to Anthony, and Christopher and yourself, and enjoy your Easter.
Okay, thank you very much, Greg.
All right, Sarah, and thanks for chatting to us. Bye-bye, take care of yourself. Isn't that lovely? And you can imagine how anxious you would be, because anyone who's been through a birth that didn't exactly go to plan knows that it doesn't always work out that way, and you need those professionals on hand. But thankfully, Christopher, he was ready to come out, and out he came. Jonathan helped, of course, did a big job there. All right, let's read some of your comments here. People can say what they want about Donald Trump, but I think if he had still been president, Putin wouldn't have invaded Ukraine. Okay, well, he invaded Ukraine before he was president, and Donald Trump didn't succeed in pushing him back or anything. But I take your point. As I say, I don't feel passionate enough about it to get dragged into a pro-anti-Trump thing. The way I look at it, and this might be really, really... selfish and naive. As far as I'm concerned, when they get off the plane at Knock Airport, Derry Airport, Belfast or Dublin, they're all Americans and they're all coming here on holidays, and I don't really care whether they're Democrats or Republicans, really. Imagine if the Irish people decided to prosecute their politicians. We'd be lucky to have a handful, not guilty. Politics is dirty and most are in it for themselves, believes that listener. Another, why are we paying such a large cost for a visit from Joe Biden? All Garda have cancelled. It's no wonder they're leaving the force in droves. All Garda leave has been cancelled. Yeah, indeed. But it is what you sign up for. You know, I mean, if you are a Garda, you are charged with policing high-profile visits, which do have their benefits. And part of that is, unfortunately, your leave being cancelled. And I'm quite sympathetic to the Gardaí, but you signed up for it, don't you? I honestly think politicians should be banned from social media. The comments they sometimes make are unbelievably stupid. I think, really, I find it quite valuable. Because in that moment when someone has a thought in their head and spews it out onto social media, I think you get a far better insight sometimes than you might from a 15-minute soft interview on RTE. So keep them on social media, I would say, but I respect your point of view. Greg, could anyone please explain to me how rising interest rates is helping ease the pressure people are under? Another letter arrived yesterday informing me that my mortgage payment has increased yet again. This when the price of everything has increased substantially. The only thing not increasing is this country's wages. Could anyone explain how raising interest rates help the normal person? It's not about helping you, I'm afraid. Sorry. The notion is, and I'm not an economist, the idea is that you increase interest rates and it chokes spending to some extent. And if people spend less, it drives prices down, thus reducing inflation. That's the crux of it. So the idea being that your cost of living should reduce if inflation is reduced. But sure, for us suckers, often with mortgages, you know, the gap between the two mortgage payments with the rise in interest rates is far greater or equal to the fall in inflation and the groceries and all that type of stuff. So I don't know who it benefits, really, to be honest with you. That's what they say. But a lot of the problems we are facing now are because of the interest rate increase strategy that the US and Europe are employing. Right, sent a picture here of a chair with the following words from George. There is chaos at the ED room at Letterkenny University Hospital. Dozens of people have been left waiting between 12 and 30 hours, having to sit in awful, uncomfortable seats, not even trolleys, which can only be described as intolerable discomfort, with inpatient beds described as being like hen's teeth. The conditions are disastrous and the department is most definitely understaffed. Now, here's a picture of the seats for those that are watching. Now, the majority of you aren't, so I'm going to explain what they are. And to be honest with you, they aren't the worst seats I've sat on in ED. The last time I was down there, it was like metal seats that you see at a bus station. But still in all, 12 to 30 hours in that seat, I'm not in any way mitigating the, and I couldn't, the awful discomfort. People waiting, you know, 20, 30 hours for x-rays and what have you. It's a tough situation down there. There's just no doubt about it. Right, now, at Homeland, on Saturday the 8th of April, this is Homeland in Letterkenny. There's an Easter, there's Easter fun. That's tomorrow. No, it's not. It's Saturday. At Homeland Letterkenny, there's an Easter egg hunt between 12 and 1pm and you can bottle feed a pet lamb between 12 and 1pm and 3 and 4pm. Donations on the day are in aid of Bumbleance. So if you want to, if you're around Letterkenny, you want to support Bumbleance, get along to Homeland in Letterkenny for Easter fun. The wee ones can bottle feed a lamb between 12 and 1 and 3 and 4, and there is an Easter egg hunt. Another day, an Easter egg hunt between 12 and 1pm, and you're supporting the Bumbleance. Back with more after the news and obituary notices.